on Wednesday we're having the annual social justice lecture, which this year is on the Northern Territory intervention to analyse where the intervention's got to after 2 years, because it was the anniversary of the intervention on the 21st of June. So the lecture's been given by Pat Anderson, who was one of the co-authors of the Little Children, A Sacred Report, which was the report commissioned by the Northern Territory Chief Minister just over 3 years ago to look into child sexual abuse in amongst Aboriginal people in the Northern Territory. And the report itself was used by the former Howard government as a justification and a basis for the intervention, even though of the 97 odd recommendations that the report came up with, only a few were used by the government. The issue of Aboriginal health and welfare is one of the most important, if not the most important, social justice issue in the country. And one of the things that the report stresses, that the report, the authors say time and time and again, is that while government has to take an active lead in solving some of these problems, it has to be a dialogue, not a monologue. So this is one of the things that they stress in relation to health and education and housing and policing of communities and so on, is that it's no good just going on over there with a strong arm approach. Many of the communities know what they need, and they need to be consulted, and they need to be involved in the processes that lead to the various solutions and activities that the governments, both federal government, has been proposing. So it's a very strong message of the report, and I think it's been a very strong message of many of the communities since then, that they need to be and want to be involved in playing a part in designing any measures to alleviate some of these problems.
I've first started working in Aboriginal communities in the mid-70s with Fred Hollows on a large national trachoma and eye health program. And then over the last 15 or 20 years, I've been doing increasing amount of work looking at a number of issues relating to eye care, or specifically focusing on eye care. Over the last 2 or 3 years, we've done quite a lot of field work in a number of Aboriginal communities, including those in the Northern Territory. And 2 years ago, I was actually working in one of the communities when the Army supported intervention team came through to assess what the issues were. So we had a chance to watch that initial contact of the intervention firsthand. There was a huge amount of concern and anxiety by the community. They were really quite frightened and very worried. Some people were very angry. But I was very impressed with the way the assessment team actually handled themselves. There was a long discussion, a lot of, you know, talking, sometimes shouting, but cool, measured responses. But the sort of things they were asking were stuff that people already knew. They said, you know, do you want a police station, somebody based here? They said, we've been asking that for 10 years. You know, the guy's got to drive 4 hours to get here. We really want somewhere where they can stay overnight. Do you want a hall? Yes, we've been asking for a gym for the school for X number of years. Do you want a people's, a women's refuge? They said, yes, we've had one of those we've been asking for 4 years. Well, what about houses? And I pointed to houses. I said, these sheds were built in 1970s. We've been asking for years and years to get them replaced. And then they said, well, we'll build some temporary houses for the people who come there. And they said, why are they only temporary? Why aren't they going to be permanent, left for us after the team goes? So there was a lot of stuff that actually people wanted as part of the intervention that had been on the agenda for years and never delivered. And I think that was one of the components of the intervention. If that actually gets developed and delivered, that'll make a huge difference. Some things have happened, but some of them are less impressive than others. In one community I went to, all the houses have been painted on the outside. They look terrific. Nothing's been done inside. They're terrible. So there's some of that stuff that one has to question about. But it takes time to build houses. It takes time to build rebuild schools and community services and money. And I think that's starting, but it's got a long, long way to go. Well, I think the worst feature to my mind, and you know, I'm a from a white person from a city, you know, far away, but working in and out of those communities, the worst thing that I saw was the actual crushing and destruction of the Aboriginal leadership. Anybody who'd been working in Aboriginal affairs was basically wiped off by the government just overthrowing all the previous activities and just saying, we're going to march in and do it. So people were grieving, people were mourning that not only the impact of the intervention, but the destruction of the Aboriginal leadership and processes and people who were just totally undermined. So that was a very bad thing to happen and should not have happened. But the as far as the quarantining of welfare payments, which has been very controversial, I think many of the people, some people are against it just ideologically and philosophically. But the vocal people are against it because they want the money to spend on alcohol, predominantly the men, and a lot of the women who are against the quarantining want the money to spend on gambling. And there's a huge amount of money that changes hands in some of these communities with the card games. But the impression that I get, talking to mostly women, but people in the communities, that things are much quieter in the interventions. There's, you know, much less problem from alcohol, noise at night, fights and stuff at night, much less humbug with people wanting money because they know the money's quarantined. And the kids are better nourished, and there's a huge change in the range of food and vegetables and stuff you can see in the stores. Yes, well, there's a part of the intervention had quite a big school focus, and you know, there's only a third or so of the kids are at school at any particular time, and the school completion rates and stuff are just shocking. And in many ways, there's sort of one or in some communities two generations that have really been passed over by education. People who don't speak English, even as a third or a fourth language, don't understand English, let alone sort of speak it, and are illiterate and non-numerate and stuff. So there's a real need for schools. But part of it is not only schools, but you've got to have teachers. And part of having the teachers there, you've got to have the housing for the teachers to stay in. And so that there's a whole series of developments that need to occur. The impact that the intervention had on our work was actually more a negative impact because of competition. Communities can only cope with so many people visiting in and out of the communities. And those who've particularly the medical assessments from the intervention teams, were very resistant to having other checks. And so many of the communities, for example, did not get the eye exams that the children would normally have as part of the healthy school kid exam. So they were not treated for trachoma that without the intervention they would have received. So that was sort of a paradoxical effect. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the health checks turned up conditions that people had known for a long time, had been well documented, but there weren't the resources or the specialist follow-up linkages to get them treated or get them seen. So that there was quite a lot of spinning the wheels, if you like, in those health checks, although there were, it did focus a lot of attention. And I think one of the benefits, or almost paradoxical benefits of the intervention, is it really has put Indigenous health and the conditions of these communities back up at the head of the news and in people's minds and consciousness.